from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 31. Narada instructs the projectors. It's text number 10. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today is also the disappearance of Abhiram Thakur. Maybe you could say a little bit about Abhiram Thakur, who was a great devotee. He's one of the Dwadasa Gopalas, cowboy friends of Nityananda Prabhu and Krishna. And he's a very, very powerful personality, a great acharya preacher, delivered many atheists and others. His place is a place called Kanal Krishna Nagar, not this Krishna Nagar, in the Hooghly district on the way to Calcutta. The district is, before you reach Calcutta, is Hooghly. So he was staying there, and he had a deity of Gopinath who appeared in his dream and said, "I'm buried in the ground here, you please dig me up." So then he dug out the deity, Gopinath, and made a big kund there. It's still there today, that kund. He was so powerful, he said, that when he paid his obeisance to someone, if they weren't bona fide, they would die. Or if he paid obeisance to the deity would crack, the shaligram would suddenly split in half. And he did this many times. He did it to Nityananda's children. The first seven of Nityananda's children were all, he said, these are not bona fide. They all died as soon as he paid his obeisance to them. And the eighth one was Gangadasi. He paid his obeisances, nothing happened. He paid obeisances 11 times. He said, "We have not been deceived this time. she is a genuine." He was a great associate of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Mahaprabhu sent Nityananda Prabhu, Abhiram Thakur, and Karatar Das to preach in this area of Bengal. So they were great friends. They always lived together. He had a whip named Jai Mangala, a whip, and he would beat people. But anybody you touch with that, you get love of Godhead. And Srinivasacharya came to his house one day and he beat him. Beat him two times, beat him three times, and he was laying on the floor in Krishna frame in ecstasy. And then his wife Nalini caught his hand. She said, "He's only a young boy, he cannot take so much. You have to stop." But he was Srinivasacharya was somewhat, he wasn't an initiated disciple, but he treated him exactly as his disciple. He went to see Raghunandan Thakur also. He had heard about Raghunandan Thakur. He told the deity to eat the laddu. And so he went to see him, to test him. So Mukunda Das, his father, he thought, Abhiram is coming. He immediately took Raghunandan Thakur away and hid him. So then Abhiram came to the village and he said, "Where is Raghunandan?" "Oh, he went to visit some relatives. He's out of town, he's out of station." So he was a little bit disappointed. So he was leaving, and then Raghunandan came to find out that that Abhiram came to see him. So he went running after him and then he embraced him. But he said, "Yes, he's bona fide." So they were having an ecstatic kirtan. And then his nupur, his ankle bell of Raghunandan flew off in that ecstatic dancing. and it landed about 2 miles away. The place is still there where it landed, Newport Kundan, just by before Katwa. Newport Kundan. He also tested Gopal. Gopal Guru, when he was a little boy, he was very much favored with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when they heard that Abhiram Thakur is coming, so immediately Gopal became frightened, running. He jumped on the lap of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu empowered him. So when Abhiram paid his obeisances to the child, nothing happened. There's another temple that side, I can't remember the exact spot now. I went there. But the deity of Gopinath, I think. And they understood that the Abhiram was coming. They said, Abhiram is coming, so the deity was there and everyone was talking, Abhiram is coming here. So the deity was, oh my God, he'll come here, pay his obeisance to me. Maybe I'll crack in half or something. So then Abhiram Thakur came and he paid his obeisances, and Krishna was standing, he started sweating. Just perspiration was falling off his face. But he didn't crack. And then afterwards, the deity said to Abhiram, why did you do that? He said, you scared the life out of me. He said, well, if I hadn't have done that, you wouldn't have sweated and nobody would have seen. But now everybody knows you're bona fide because they saw you sweating. So you're a bona fide deity. You know, no problem. Otherwise, they may not have believed you. He was married under the instruction of Nityananda Prabhu. His wife's name was Malini, their internal potency of the Lord. They were living in that area, in the garden. And the Jamindar there, they saw that this girl was living in the tree. It's a fairy, some kind of fairy living with some friends. And he told the, I think it was the guy who looks after the place, but he told the landlord that there's a fairy living on your land, that everything is becoming opulent where she's living. You should move her to your place, to your house. So they requested that she come. He said, you send me a palanquin and have me a cottage and just give me sandesh. I will eat, that's what I will eat. So she was there for some time with her friends, and it's on the bank of the Ganga, and Abhiram and Nityananda were walking along the other side, and Nityananda Prabhu said, I think you should get married, Abhiram Prabhu. So he said, okay. Malini! She was the other side. She immediately heard, she jumped in the Ganga, and all of her friends, oh, she's going to drown. She went to the other side, and then they just walked off. And the Zamindar came in to check him. Oh, why are you doing? What's happening? So then they explained. They understand that she is his eternal consort of Abhiram Thakur. Abhiram Thakur ki? Jai. Okay.
Kim Janma Bish Shribir Deha Sopra Savitra Jagnikai Karmabir Ba Chai Doktai Umso Papi Vibhuthayas Yusha Kim Janma Bish Shribir Deha Shukra Sabitra Yagnikai Karma Deva Chai Protai Umso Pi Viput Hayusha kim jama bis chi bir behi ha shukra savitra jagnakai arma beva chai proktai kum so api bi budhayasa kim jama bis chi bir behi shukra savitra jagnakai Arma Bivachai Proktai Umsa Pi Biputayusa Kintama Bishi Viveha Sukra Savitra Jatikai Arma Bivachai Kim jama bischi viveha Sukra savitra yatnike Kama divachai proktai Kum so kitu kaisa Kim jama bischi
messages. Kim, what is the use? Janamabhi, of births, tribi, three, va, or, iha, in this world, shokra, by semen, shabitra, by initiation, jagnikai, by becoming a perfect brahmana, karmabhi, by activities, va, or, trayi, in the Vedas, proktai, instructed, pumsha, of a human being, api, even, vibhuta, of the demigods, ayusha, with a duration of life. Translation of Purple by His Divine Grace, Bhaicharanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. A civilized human being has three kinds of births. The first birth is by a pure father and a mother, and this birth is called birth by semen. The next birth takes place when one is initiated by the spiritual master, and this birth is called Savitra. The third birth is called Jagnika, takes place when one is given the opportunity to worship Lord Vishnu. Despite the opportunities for attaining such births, even if one gets the lifespan of a demigod, if one does not actually engage in the service of the Lord, everything is useless. Similarly, one's activities may be mundane or spiritual, but they are useless if they are not meant for satisfying the Lord. Please repeat. A civilized human being has three kinds of births. The first birth by a pure father and mother. And this birth is called birth by semen. The next birth takes place when one is initiated by the spiritual master. And this birth is called Savitri. The third birth, called Yajnika, takes place when one is given the opportunity to worship Lord Vishnu. Despite the opportunities for attaining such births, even if one gets the lifespan of a demigod, if one doesn't actually engage in the service of the Lord, everything is useless. Similarly, one's activities may be mundane or spiritual, but they are useless if they are not meant for satisfying the Lord. Purport. The word Shukra Janma means taking birth by seminal discharge. Animals can take their birth in this way too. However, a human being can be reformed from the Shukra Janma as recommended in the Vedic civilization. Before the birth takes place, or before the father and the mother unite, there is a ceremony called the Garbhadana Samskara, which must be adopted. This Garbhadana Samskara is especially recommended for the higher castes, especially the Brahmana castes. It is said in the Shastra that if the Garbhadana Samskara is not practiced among the higher castes, the entire family becomes Shudra. It is also stated that in this age of Kali, everyone is Shudra due to the absence of the Garbhadana Samskara. This is the Vedic system. According to the Pancharatriki system, however, even though everyone is a Shudra due to the absence of the Garbhadana Samskara, if a person has but a little tendency to become Krishna conscious, he should be given the chance to elevate himself to the transcendental platform of devotional service. Our Krishna consciousness movement adopts this Pancharatriki Vidhi as advised by Srila Sanatana Goswami, who says, Jata kanchanatam jati kamsyam rasa vidhanatha tata diksha vidhanina dvijatam jayati niranam. That as bell metal, when mixed with mercury, is transformed into gold, a person, even though not golden pure, can be transformed into a brahmana or dvija simply by the initiation process, from Hari Bhakti Vilas 2.12. And thus, if one is initiated by a proper person, he can be accepted as twice born immediately. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we therefore offer the student his first initiation and allow him to chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. By chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra, Maha Mantra regularly, and following the regulative principles, one becomes qualified to be initiated as a brahmana. Because unless one is qualified brahmana, he cannot be allowed to worship Lord Vishnu. This is called Jagnika Janama. In our Krishna consciousness society, unless one is twice initiated, first by chanting Hare Krishna and second by Gayatri Mantra, he is not allowed to enter the kitchen or the deity room to execute duties. However, when one is elevated to the platform on which he can worship the deity, his previous birth does not matter. Chandalo pi dvija shreshto hari bhakta prayana hari bhakti vihinascha dvijo pi swapaccha dhamma. Even if one is born in a family of chandalas, if one is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, he becomes the best of brahmanas. But even a brahmana who is devoid of devotional service is on the level of the lowest dog eater. If a person is advanced in devotional service, it does not matter whether he was born in the Chandala family. He becomes purified. As Prahlad Maharaj said, Vipradishad guna yutad aravinda nabha padaravinda vimukchak swapacham varishtam. Bhagavatam 7.9.10. That even if one is a brahmana and is qualified with all the brahminical qualifications, he is considered degraded if he is averse to worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if a person is attached to the service of the Lord, he becomes glorified even if he is born in the Chandala family. Indeed, such a Chandala can deliver not only himself but all of his family predecessors. Without devotional service, even a proud brahmana cannot deliver himself, and what to speak of his family. In many instances in the Shastra, it is seen that even a brahmana has become a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Malechra, or a non-brahmana. And there are many instances of one's being born in a Kshatriya or Vaishya or even lower, and in the 18th year attaining elevation to the brahminical platform by the process of initiation. Therefore, Narada Muni says, Yasha ya lakshanam proktam pum shambhana viva yanjakam yat anyatrapi drishyata tat trinoiva vinirdishet. Bhagavatam 7.11.35. It is not a fact that because one is born in a brahmana family, he is automatically a brahmana. He has a better chance to become a brahmana, but unless he meets all the brahminical qualifications, he cannot be accepted as such. On the other hand, if the brahminical qualifications are found in the person of a sudra, he should immediately be accepted as a brahmana. To substantiate these, there are many quotations from Bhagavatam, Mahabharat, Bharadwaj Samhita, and Pancharatra, as well as many other scriptures. As far as the duration of life of the demigods is concerned, concerning Lord Brahma, it is said, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Ahayad Brahmano Vitu Ratrim Yuga Sahasrantam Teho Ratra Pidojana. Bhagavad Gita 8.17. The duration of one day of Brahma is 1,000 times greater than the four yugas, aggregating 4,320,000 years. Similarly, Brahma's one night. Brahma lives for 100 years of such days and nights. The word vibhudhai yusha indicates that even if one gets a long lifespan, his lifespan is useless if he is not a devotee. A living entity is eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, and unless he comes to the platform of devotional service, his lifespan, good birth, glorious activities, and everything else are null and void. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Jananjanan Shalakya Takshuram Velitandina Tashmaya Shri Girimha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garata Shivashari Gaur Bhakta Vrind Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Narada Muni speaking here to the projectors, and yesterday's verse, the great sage Narada has just arrived, and this is his first words, his opening words. The great sage Narada said, when a living entity is born to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Controller, his birth, his fruitive activities, his lifespan, his mind and his words are all factually perfect. So Narada Muni speaks such concise words. This is how he's opening his speech to the projectors. One who is engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his birth becomes glorious, his activities become glorious, his lifespan is glorious, his mind is glorious, his words, everything becomes factually perfect. So this is how the great sages like Narad can capture the essence of everything, you know, more or less in one sentence. Without the devotional service, actually everything is useless. Life is useless, work is useless, birth is useless, words are useless. Everything is useless without devotional service. It comes straight to the point. This is Narada. Straight to the point. So in this these verses, he's talking about the different different types of births. So basically, this is speaking of three births. The Shokra, Shadmitra, and Jagnikai. The Shokra is a birth by semen, the first father, and the ordinary father and mother, who should be pure. And you get your first birth, the body from that. The second birth is the Savitri. Savitri means Gayatri, like Gayatri. It's another name of Gayatri, Savitri. The wife of Lord Vishnu. And the third birth, Jagnika, is when one gets initiated into the names of Krishna. He gets the initiation into the process of devotional service to Krishna. He gets Krishna's mantras, and so generally that's the mantras of the Sampradaya. We have our different mantras for chanting because we worship Krishna. So we have Govinda, Gopichana Balava, Gopinath. So when one is initiated into the Vishnu mantras, according to the Sampradaya, then he becomes transcendental to all. The first birth, mother, father, second, the Vediki birth is the Brahmanas, they receive the Gayatri mantras, the Savitri. They're receiving the Gayatri mantras, and so then this is given by the family priest. When it mentions acharya here, it means like the family acharya. We generally speak of our acharyas and our sampradaya who are giving, presenting Radha Krishna. But the acharya here mentioned the Savitri acharya is the family guru and the brahmanas who initiates the descendants into the especially with the Brahma Gayatri. So first you have the material mother and father, then you have the acharya who represents the father, and the Gayatri mantra represents the mother. Then when you're more advanced, you take initiation from a devotee of Vishnu, a pure devotee of Vishnu, Jagnikai, and so then that spiritual master becomes your father, and the mother becomes the initiated mantras. So these are the three types of births we take, and we get three types of mothers and fathers according to the Jagnika spiritual master. He initiates you into the Vedic the Vedic mantras, but not the but the mantras, the Vedas that deal with establishing one's relationship with Krishna. This is the purpose of the Vedas. So the acharyas, the spiritual masters, they are able to draw out the essence of the Vedas, that which is meant to enhance our understand our relationship with Krishna. In fact, this is the purpose of the Vedas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that. It's to know Krishna. Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, the purpose of the Vedas is to understand me. So this is what the spiritual master, the pure devotee spiritual master, he gives you the mantras of Krishna to enable us to have a relationship with Krishna, to enter into a relationship with Krishna. This is the sambandha. So the purpose of the Vedas, sambandha abhidhaya and prayojana, is to know Krishna, is the to be known through the Vedas. To serve Krishna, this is the abhidhaya, the process. And to love Krishna, this is the goal of the Vedas. So that spiritual master who brings out, initiates the disciple into these aspects, brings up these aspects of the Vedas. But the Savitra Brahmanas, generally they're attached to materialistic worship, which promises elevation to heavenly planets and enjoying in this life and things like that. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the Vedas generally they deal mostly with the modes of material nature. You should rise above these, Arjuna. You shouldn't be attracted to these flowery words of the Vedas, which gives you elevation to heavenly planets and enjoyments and things like this. Don't be attracted. There's something more than this into the Vedas. So generally they become attached to the, for the fruits of the by performing pious activities. And they get stuck on that, and they think that no, Brahmana birth is the highest birth. There's nothing beyond this, and we'll just perform our Brahmana duties. But even there on that platform, Savitri, they fall down from that platform because they offend pure devotees. When the pure devotees come and tell her there's something higher than simply the Brahman birth and involvement in pious activity, there's something greater than that, then they become angry. What do you mean? This is the greatest birth. Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, we're on top. Why are you... So then they criticize. This is their downfall. Then they even drop down from that Brahminical platform. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had to face so much of this, so much criticism he got from the smarter Brahmanas, but he came out successful in the end. It was a long fight, Prabhupada said. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emerged victorious in his establishing the position of pure Vaishnavism as above even the Brahmanism. So so it's just this elevation to heavenly planets. What is the purpose of that? If you're not using, you got a human life and you're not using it for the ultimate purpose, then there is no difference between the human and the pig, because the result is the same. You're both going to take rebirth again. So it's not solving the problem of this world. So the devotees can understand the real problems, and they know the solution to get out of it. So the smarter brahmanas, they use this argument that no, we've taken birth in a brahmana family. Why? Because of our karma. Because of previous activities, we had Brahminical training and culture and karma. So now we've taken birth in the family of Brahmanas. If you don't have Brahminical karma, you're not going to get born in a Brahman family. That's the law of nature. It's a fact. So therefore, that's why by birth, that states in itself that you're qualified by birth. Because if you wasn't qualified by birth, you would take your birth as a Kshatriya Vaishya or a Sudra. But because you've taken birth as a Brahman, therefore you're a Brahman. Therefore it's... So the Vaishnava, to counteract this argument, no, the very fact that you've taken birth in a Brahmana family is an indication that you still have more purification to take place. Because when you take birth in a Brahman family and follow Brahminical culture, then you've got so many samskaras, beginning with the Garbhodana samskara. You've got to go through all these different samskaras, a whole life. And these samskaras are what? For purification. So the fact that you've taken your birth as a Brahman, in a Brahman family, means you need more purification. But if you're not using your birth for this actual purification, what it's meant, and a dog eater, he becomes a devotee, he's interested in serving Krishna, and he gets initiated, he becomes greater than the Brahmana who doesn't serve Krishna. He was born in the family of dog eaters. But because of his attraction for serving Krishna, he becomes greater than the Brahmana who doesn't engage in devotional service, but simply engages in pious activities. It is said that the Chandala, or the lowest class man, he has to give up his sinful activity before he can become a Vaishnava. You can't maintain to be a Vaishnava and continue sinful activity. So even the lowest class men, the dog eater, they have to give up their sinful activity and then they can become a Vaishnava. Similarly, a Brahmana, he has to give up all of his pious activities physically with his body, mind and words before he can become a Vaishnava also. So Chandala has to give up his sinful activities before he can come, and a Brahman has to give up his pious activities that he's so attached to before he can become a Vaishnava. So what is the use of performing all these pious activities if they simply elevate to the heavenly planets and back again, and that back again, up and down and up and down and up and down? So this is what we call Vedic nonsense. Everything is there in the Vedas and it's all nice and you should do it and it's very pious and it's very sattvic, but as a result you have to come and take birth again in the material world. The Vedas propound this theory of Rini. Rini and Kinkara. Rini means a debtor. You're a debtor. From birth, you have a debt. Six debtors, or anything. Mother, father, they gave you the body. You're in debt to your mother and father. You have to pay off that debt. The demigods giving heat, light, rain, you've got to pay off that debt. The rishis, sages in the family, they're giving knowledge your family uses, you've got to pay off those debts. The government in general is making roads, things that you've got to pay off the debt. People in general. So you're born a debtor. Now you have to pay these debts off. So there's recommended process by worshipping these different... Your forefathers, the Pitras, you have to worship the Pitras. Kinkara means servant. So you're a Rini. So to become free, a debtor, to become free from this debtor, you've got to serve and pay back. So you become a Kinkara, a servant. So you become a servant of your forefathers. You worship your forefathers in Pitraloka. You worship the demigods who are supplying all the necessities of life. Krishna says, you should worship. Be thou happy by this sacrifice. It'll restore upon you all that you need. You're indebted to all these peoples. So you worship them. Then you pay off your debt. Then you're a free man. Supposedly. But what is the result? What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? If you worship the Pitras, you go to Pitrilo. If you worship the Devas, you go to Devaloka. You worship the Buddhas, you go to... So you're paying off the debt, and what is the result? You become their servant. So next birth, you take your birth in Pitriloka or in Devaloka, somewhere like that. Vedic nonsense. Promising nice things, it seems very good, but it's not solving the real problem. You're a debtor, you become a kinkara. Again, you take your birth with the devas. Then you come back and start again. Born a debtor again. Same thing again. Of course, the Vedas are nonsense. We use this term, Vedic nonsense. Phantasmagoria, chasing after the flowery words of Vedas. We say it's not, but it's not nonsense, but we are nonsense. So that's why the Krishna has arranged the Vedas. It's for nonsense people who don't want to surrender to Krishna. They still think they can enjoy in the material world. They are nonsense. So Krishna says, okay, you still attach your nonsense here. Do it like this, do it like this. You'll go to heavenly planets, do it like this. Oh, you're attached to your karma, do it like this. You're attached to your being a big jnani, you can understand everything. Okay, do it like this. You're attached to becoming a big yoga here. Do it like this. I've given all this information because you think you're so great. And I'm dependent on my own abilities and my achievements in this world. It's all this nonsense. That's why Krishna's created all this, to suit our nonsense mentality. Otherwise, they're all necessary. Therefore, Krishna says, sarvadhanam parityaja mamikam. You give up all those nonsense philosophies of I'm the controller and I'm the enjoyer of all these different systems. You surrender to me. So this is the actual purpose of the Vedas, is to bring one understanding one's relationship with Krishna and to the platform of serving Krishna. So this is the thing that's missing in society, is service to Krishna. Maybe I mentioned it a couple of days ago. Anyway, I'll tell you. When I was in Rishikesh some time ago, you've been there, it's a beautiful place. It's right on the bank of the Ganga. It's where the Ganga comes from, the Himalayas. It's into the flatland, and you can move around. Beautiful river, beautiful vibrations there. All so many sadhus there. And really, really heavily populated now, with houses and some beautiful flats, luxury flats, they're beautiful. And practically all of these ashrams and flats, they've got some system of yoga there. Everyone is like that. There's thousands and thousands of them. And you see, they're all doing some kind of puja, some kind of worship, some kind of jagana, some kind of chanting, some kinds of kirtan, some also doing. When you look a little bit closely, it all seems very nice, and all different types of demigods, there's Ganesh and some. They're all into something different. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ashram. But if you look carefully, there's not one you can find that's actually giving you service to Krishna. Of all the so-called spiritual groups, they're still falling short of this point of service to Krishna. And that is our very nature, jivasurupa nitya Krishna does. So this is what the living entity needs more than anything else. He needs his service, he needs to be situated in his constitutional position. Otherwise, all useless. Prabhupada is saying again and again, becomes useless. He's quoting the one day of Brahma, quoting this verse from Bhagavad Gita, one day of Brahma. So the demigod, what to speak of the demigods, the life of the demigod. So here Prabhupada is saying, what to speak of Brahma's lifetime? What to speak of Brahma's lifetime without devotional service? Without coming to the platform of devotional service, lifespan of even Brahma, he's got the best birth in the universe. It's a glorious birth. And he's good he's creating the whole universe. It's a good activity also. But unless he's using that in devotional service, everything is null and void. Everything is useless. Because it hasn't really addressed the real problem. And that is the living entity is Krishna's servant. And he needs it to be connected to Krishna by that service. So this is the essence of the Veda is actually teaching us to know Krishna, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, So this is what the acharyas, the real acharyas in this sense, are bringing out, not the materialistic, smarter brahmanas. This is not... Right, you see, you go to Navadvip or anywhere actually in India, you see that little brahmana, he's walking around, he's just got one chadar on and a dhoti, and he's got a little basket, a brass basket with little holes in it and a little handle because he keeps things cool, that little. And he's got some flowers and chandan inside, a little bit of Ganga Jal, and he goes around from one shop to another, and ooh, he does a little bit of puja to the picture on the wall, like he got a little Ganesh, and he does, or he goes from house to house to the brahmanas, goes in and he does a little bit of all the Indian bodied people will know this very well, most probably. The brahmana comes to the house and he gives a little bit of chant, he worships your picture and the deity, and he gives you a little worship, but he's not brahmana even, because he worships the demigods. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he said, a worshipper of the demigods cannot be a brahmana. He said, because a brahmana, Krishna says, those who worship the demigods are less intelligent, and the brahmana is not less intelligent. He should be, he has the greatest knowledge. So therefore, if he's worshipping demigods, he's not a brahmana, because he's less intelligent. Anyway, luckily for us, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he clarified that whole misunderstanding between the smarter brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. Otherwise, we would still be having a problem today. But there was a big meeting in, where was that place? North from here. They had a big meeting there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was invited, but he couldn't go. You may say it was politically incorrect for him to go, because his guru, initially Bipin Bihari Goswami, who was from the smarter Brahmana line, from the Nityananda Bhamsa, there was some disagreement. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had some little bit philosophical disagreement. And Bipin Bihari was there also in the meeting, so it would be wrong if Bhaktivinoda Thakur and go and speak out openly and against the philosophy that is the smarters are presenting in front of his guru. They would say, you see the impotence, you know, the disciple is speaking in front. Anyway, it was a little bit delicate situation, you can say. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, there must be someone who can defeat these people. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, could I try? So then he wrote a little essay on, and he showed it to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Bhaktivinoda said, oh, Saraswati, yes, you present this to that meeting. So he went there and he presented this difference between the Vaishnavas and the Brahmanas. And it was a grand success. He defeated, first he spoke so nicely about the Brahmanas, glorifying the Brahmanas, how great birth, and they're all, he was quoting Shastras they'd never even heard of. And their voice is very good. And they were, but then he actually revealed the higher position of the Vaishnavas. So every time they challenged him, they were completely cut out. So it was a complete defeat for the smarter Brahmanas at that time. And there was a whole commotion there. It was a huge meeting. And then they were banging on the door of Bhaktisiddhanta, and a big mob was there, and the smarter Brahmins, some were angry, others were related. There was a big mob out there, and they're banging on the door. You can't come in. We're not going to open the door. And the police said, Lee, open the door. Otherwise, they're going to cause a riot here. They said, these people want to see you. But they want to take initiation from you. They're not coming to oppose you. They want initiation from you. And they want to take the dust of your feet. Which Bhaktisiddhanta would never let anyone touch his feet or wash his feet. So they let the police came in and they forcibly grabbed Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And they had a big nuka, one of those big pots, huge pot. They put his foot in it and they poured buckets of water over his feet. And then he went out and distributed all the Charanamrita. Everybody was happy to get their Charanamrita. So it was a grand, glorious success. There's a book, Vaishnava and Brahmanism, you can read it. Srinu Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda ki nitai go premanandi. Thank you very much. 10 to 9. Any comment or question?
A question.
Hi, Krishna.
It is said that one who took births in the holy dam is called the Damvasis or Vrajavasis.
One who?
The Damvasis. Hmm. They always stand superior to devotees because they are born in the holy dam. So my question is, if a Chandala can rise against above the Brahmanas, why does those contradictions? Somebody born in the Chandra family can become a Vaishnava? Then it's above the Brahmanas who are not devotees. So why do we make distinction and say somebody is born in the holy dam, you don't have to offend him, whatever he do, you should tolerate it because he's a Damvasi. Why?
Well, a dam is a special category. They've taken birth in the dam due to previous devotional service. Otherwise you cannot take birth in the dam. So. It's a different category. They may be born in the Dharma as a Chandala or a Brahmana, but it's due to their previous devotional service. So this classification is not really applicable in the Dharma.
There was a lecture of Prabhupada in Vrindavan. The early devotees, they were cheated. They went to buy something in the shop. The people in Vrindavan, they cheated them, so they were fighting. And Prabhupada asked his devotees they should leave Vrindavan.
Should?
They should leave Vrindavan for offending the Vrajavasis. Even if they cheat you, you must be humble. But here it is saying, if a Chandala becomes a Vaishnava, is superior to one who is born in the Brahmana family, who is not a devotee. Is it not a contradiction? Because they are born in Vrindavan, they can cheat me, I should remain humble. But here it is, Bhagavatam is saying, even if they are born in those holy places like a Brahmana family, they are not devotees, they don't worship Vishnu, they are not considered superior. But their Prabhupada is saying, even if they cheat you, because they are born in the holy dam, you should remain humble. And he sent devotees to leave Vrindavan and they left. I found it contradictory. Understand?
Prabhupada told them to leave, they should leave. The devotees were stealing, actually. They weren't cheating, the devotees were cheating. When they first arrived, I mean, some of the first ones, and they were going through Lai Bazaar, and the sweet wallahs had all their sandesh and misty. And the devotees would just take one. They said, well, Krishna used to steal. And they were going through Lai Bazaar and they were taking, he's stealing all the... Krishna used to steal, so it's okay, we're in Vrindavan. And then Yashamba Goswami from Radha Raman temple, he was a friend of Prabhupada. He said, why have you brought these young lions to Vrindavan? You brought these young lions to Vrindavan, they're walking around like proud, like, just taking everything they want and laughing. It's no, Krishna steals, we can steal. And Prabhupada chastised him for that, you shouldn't do that. He said, you can ask, if you want to buy some sweet, you can ask for a sample. They'll always give you a sample, you can taste it, and then you can buy it. The young lions. Thank you.